This message comes from NPR sponsor Acorn TV. Acorn TV is brilliant television told brilliantly. From charmingly cozy mysteries to daringly dark dramas, visit acorn.tv for a 30-day free trial with promo code NPR. Acorn TV. Brilliant.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Elise Hugh. All month, we're bringing you a summer music series here on the show. On today's episode, Phoebe Bridgers. 2020 was a huge year for Phoebe. Her album Punisher came out to major critical acclaim. NPR Music named it their number 4 best album of the entire year. Phoebe also snagged 4 Grammy nominations, including one for Best New Artist. We are bringing Phoebe's interview with former host Sam Sanders back for you because her music, the haunting, soothing, acoustic guitar-filled tracks, got a lot of our team through that first year of the pandemic. Phoebe and Sam talk about success and fame and whether you actually get to enjoy it. And they'll unpack some of the songs and lyrics from Punisher. All right, here's Sam and Phoebe.
I gotta say, I am excited about all of my interviews, but really nervous about them anymore. But I gotta admit, I was a little nervous about this one because Phoebe, you have been literally the soundtrack to my 2020.
Oh my gosh. I'm not kidding. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I cannot tell you how many times I have literally been walking through the woods, watching my dog chase deer that she'll never catch, listening to Phoebe Bridgers, and also maybe sometimes crying just a little bit. Thank you for the catharsis.
I love that so much. I love that that's my compliment. Like, I've signed myself up to being like, man, I lost it so hard the other day in my car. And I'm like, thank you. You know? It's great.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is a really timely year for an album like Punisher, which deals with themes of boredom and melancholy and sadness and loss. Like, it's a really timely year for that kind of album to come out when we're all having to really sit with those emotions more than usual. I mean, you couldn't have planned it better.
Yeah, it seemed like I couldn't have planned it worse. Like, in the beginning, I'm glad I wasn't, one, in the middle of making something or in the middle of a tour. But yeah, I had literally just finished the record. Well, I finished, like, the last music video for the record, like, the day before lockdown, where we were all like, is this real? Is this what's happening? And then I finished, or I was gonna the next week then fly to Japan for tour. Yeah, it's been a nightmare. But I think people are answering, like, how are you, more accurately this year, which is so rad. Like, instead of like, oh my gosh, fine, everything's great. Like, the answer now, the obligatory answer is, well, you know, everything sucks, but.
Yeah. On that theme, how are you as this 2020 kind of comes to a close?
I am very lucky. I have experienced nothing other than boredom, no personal losses. You know, again, the collective trauma of reading and watching too much news. So I'm doing relatively fine. How are you?
I'm good. I actually had been in LA for years, and I came back home to Texas around July to be closer to family. And yeah, it's just been like 6 months of not having a permanent address. Half my stuff's in storage. A few things are here. And just getting used to that uncertainty. Like, I'm 36 years old now. I'm pretty methodical. And like, this year has been just flux, 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 flux. But you make peace with it and you're stronger for it, I think. So I'm ultimately fine. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds, it reminds me of tour a little bit. That feeling of just being like, in between moves, or people who are making big life choices and then are like, well, I guess it just has to remain kind of half done.
Half in, half out.
Exactly.
Yeah. How much do you miss tour? Because you've talked about tour, and like, some of the lyrics in the album are alluding to tour life. I can't tell if you love being on tour or hate it or something in between.
Yeah, the answer is yes. I tweeted at the very beginning of the pandemic, and I still think about it every day, which is, I can't wait to hate tour again. I went on like a small press trip in New York in February, and mm-hmm. I was having that kind of like welling up, overwhelmed feeling where I was like, oh my God, like I'm asking for it again. I'm going to be miserable again. I'm so busy. I'm the queen of kind of leaving my DOP kit in a hotel room and not realizing it for 3 days and having my manager like ship it to the other, like just having all your, it takes so much to be a human being in just day-to-day life. But on tour, you're like, oh my God,
moving your humanness to a new spot every day.
Yeah. You're like, did I leave my wallet at the Love's truck stop? Or just, it's like mental math every day. And now I'm finding myself really romanticizing that and missing it. So I'm trying to like be grateful for this time, but also I miss tour so much.
Yeah.
I would go on the worst tour on earth right now if I could.
Really?
Yeah. If I could snap my fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird time to be a creative though, because like you have more time to create. You have more time to sit down and write songs if you want to. But so often I think what sparks creativity is serendipity.
Yes.
And chance encounters. Mm. And those are just happening less. Like, have you found this year to be more inspiring as a songwriter or less?
I think I'm always kind of the same. I think that was slightly, I think that was disappointing because.
No, it's not. It's fine.
But because being on tour, you feel like you're having an affair with music where you're, you know, you sneak backstage for 20 minutes and you try to hash out a little idea that you had, or like my song Savior Complex, I wrote in my sleep on accident, like just the melody. I could never write words in my sleep, but I had this, I woke up with this weird melody in my head, and there's something so romantic about that. But yeah, you do wish you had more time to hash it out.
Emotional affair, overly sincere, smoking.
And then like every other person on earth who makes stuff with their brain, at the beginning of COVID, I was like, can't wait to write my 5 albums. Uh-huh. And I think I've written like exactly the same amount of songs that I did last year. I don't want to say I'm slow. I think I'm deliberate. Like
there you go.
I had a therapist say that to me once and I was like, I think yes, because I'll draft a song first. Like, I can write a song fast, but then my favorite version of it is after I've thought about it every day for like 6 months, and the weird little phonetic, like it's just so unrecognizable to where it was in the beginning. So I think instead of writing a lot of songs, I write the same song like 5 times, and then the 5th version is always sort of my favorite.
Which song on Punisher was the most worked through like that?
I think it was probably the last song on the record, the I Know the End song.
Somewhere in Germany, but I can't place it. Man, I hate this part of Texas. Close my eyes, fantasize. 3 clicks and I'm home.
It was just this super miserable song that my drummer and I were writing about breaking up, which is also, yeah, I love music for that reason.
Dated.
Yeah, we dated and
and then wrote a broke up song together, Phoebe.
Yeah, and we.
Oh my God,
I know it's
you're better than me. You're better than me.
But you had to go. I know. Like a wave that crashed and melted on the shore.
He had this like miserable couple verses, and I just didn't really resonate with them. Maybe it was his experience, but
yeah,
I probably wrote like 5 different versions. And then 3 years later, literally, I was like, I want a song on the album with a crazy outro. And then that song is a piece of everything because it took a really, really long time to write some of it. And then the last piece just kind of came super fast. Like that whole outro section is just like I just sat down and wrote it.
It gets cacophonous. It gets louder and louder and yelling and screaming. So that came easier than the earlier stuff in the song?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I have all the ideas. I'll even have them not connected to a song. I'm like, okay, I want a crazy outro, and I want to scream, and I want it to sound like Sufjan Stevens, and I want to have fake cheering at the end of the song. I was reading Her Body and Other Parties at the time by Carmen Maria Machado, and she has a story called Inventories, where it's like all the people that she slept with during the apocalypse.
Okay.
I think it's like a zombie apocalypse, but
love it.
And the way that it ends is she's on this island writing in her journal. She's writing lists to keep herself sane. So just the sleeping with people list is a list, but she ends up on this island alone. And I guess I thought if the world was going to end, I'd go up to like Big Sur. I spent a lot of my childhood in Northern California. So thinking about where, like, the fictional place I would escape to, kind of.
Wow. Big Sur is a nice pick.
Oh, that's great.
Wow. And so what do you want listeners to take from a song like that? That, like, it's about breakup, and it's about apocalypse, and it's also about just, like, the primal scream. Like, I hear so many themes and ideas when you talk about this song. Like, what are you hoping the listeners leave that song with?
My hope always is that I can be universal in specificity. So I love hearing what other people take from things, because it puts me in the position of pretending like I'm smarter than I am. When someone's like, it reminds me so much of this, this, and this, or this time in my life, or this book that I loved. And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
That's what I was going for. Yeah,
totally. So I think I just kind of like, it takes me a really long time to figure out what I wanted initially. My favorite thing about songwriting is stuff like this, where I'll, maybe it's the, you know, back of my mind, or I'm not really intending to put a point across, and then later I'll realize what it means. But I drove up to Big Sur like at the beginning of October, and just by myself, for like no reason. And I think I had been really thinking about it, and the world is sort of ending. So yeah, it's like even more fun to sing now.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you talk about that specificity, like on the latest album, on Punisher, what does it the most for me is probably Chinese Satellite. I've been running around in circles, pretending to be myself. When you sing, I've been running around in circles, pretending to be myself. Why would somebody do this on purpose when they could do something else? And then you say, drowning out the morning birds with the same three songs over and over. Drowning out the same three songs over and over. I'm like, was she watching me? How does she know? And like, I wonder, when you're writing that specifically, is there a barometer for you about how specific to get, how detailed to get? Because there's a balance to strike, right? Because you don't want to write something that like no one will understand, but you want it to be specific to you, I'm guessing.
I'm realizing that people don't always know what I'm talking about, which is very weird. I think I just assume everybody knows what I'm talking about all the time. But it is a matter of personal taste. I've definitely stopped myself from, you know, just like reading the nutrition information on the back of like a pack of Fig Newtons or something in a song. like just...
But you know what? If you made it a song, I'd probably like it.
Just like the balance of, am I being boring? Am I being annoying? Am I being kitschy? Am I now a cartoon of myself? But I don't really think that stuff until like 3 days after I write something. Took a tour to see the stars, but they weren't out tonight. So I wished hard on a Chinese satellite.
what's the thing you're most afraid of conveying in a song? Like, what do you fear conveying in a song?
Ooh.
If anything.
Yeah, I think actually I'm afraid of accidentally conveying my own privilege and brattiness. I'm afraid of putting my genuine soul into a song and then having someone be like, what's her problem? Like, are you kidding me? And I hear that in like some of my earlier music, and that's,
give me an example.
I have like a really old song called Waiting Room where, yeah, I wrote it when I was like 16, and people find it every once in a while and tag me in it or whatever. And I think I'm just, one, it's super sincere and I meant everything, but it's so emotionally raw and I'm so pining for someone.
If you were a teacher, I would fill your class, take it over and over till you notice me.
I had like the best high school relationship where it was not fumbly. Yeah, it was so just, yeah, it's like that doesn't happen. And I think the fact that I'm complaining so much in the song is, especially in retrospect, like, dude, you're fine. I'm afraid of myself in 5 years hearing Punisher and being like, what are you talking about?
Coming up, more with Sam and Phoebe Bridgers on creating new music during a strange and difficult year.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BritBox, helping people discover a world of British TV, including new original drama Time, starring Jodie Whittaker, Tamara Lawrence, and Bella Ramsey. Streaming at BritBox.com/NPR.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election: guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
I want to talk about another song on the album that's really, really quite specific. Kyoto, which is about your dad and your relationship with him. It paints a picture right away. I've been driving out to the suburbs to park at the Goodwill and stare at the chemtrails with my little brother. He said you called on his birthday. You were off by like 10 days, but you get a few points for trying. And I hear this song. Well, one, the first time you hear it, you hear a happy song, not these sad lyrics, right? But then two, I hear those lyrics and I totally relate to it, even though that wasn't my dad. My dad wasn't like that. We had a different relationship. But I get it. Who were you writing that song to? Are you writing it to a certain type of listener? Are you writing it to your dad? Are you writing it to yourself?
It's kind of everyone. I think that there's a desire it's almost like closure to have, especially a song you're proud of, singing a song like that every day and having to have conversations like this is weirdly its own form of therapy. You know what I mean? You're like, this is a thing in my life that should probably be examined. And I should stop projecting this character onto partners or people I meet.
Mm.
But it's funny because there are pieces that are about my dad. There is like a piece about my grandpa that's more, this is so funny, that's kind of more the missing the birthday thing. Like my dad's always very good about birthdays. And we've like been talking again during COVID, which is so weird. But
you and your dad.
Yeah. So nice. He also, we have never discussed the song. And then the other day he called me and was like, so we got a Grammy for our song. And I was like, oh man.
I love that we. I love that we.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, ha, 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 ha.
For listeners who don't know Kyoto yet, and they should know it, how much can you describe what your relationship with your father has been like is now to set up the context of these songs and those lyrics?
It's a very weird combination of like emotionally unavailable, but very present in a weird way. And I think as an adult, I'm just kind of like looking back with more sympathy for my parents, which is great. Feels great.
Yeah.
It's nice to not feel like emotionally trapped all the time with stuff that you carry into your life. Like I think I was angry for a long time and it's the song is basically about like not being angry anymore.
Which is a good way to feel and a good place to get to.
Totally.
A thing I like about your music and your songwriting is that you will quite often respond to listener questions about your songs and your lyrics, which is like really cool and nice of you. And you don't have to do that. From what I can tell, half of the internet thinks it's a metaphor and probably less than half know that that actually happened to you. The lyric in Garden Song, when you write, "The doctor put her hands over my liver."
The doctor put her hands over my liver. She told me my resentment's getting smaller.
And she told me my resentment's getting smaller. When I first heard it, I was like, "Woo! Oh my God! Oh, this is it!" And then I was reading about it, and you were like, "No, that just actually happened."
Yeah. I have this like nutritionist lady in LA who, you know, at risk of sounding like every LA person on earth, I think she literally saved my life. I was going through a thing where every time I went on tour, I'd get sick immediately. I had to be on antibiotics like 5 times 1 year, and someone recommended her to me, and I went, and she just hit me with some like, "You take this every day now. You don't eat sugar and you don't drink."
Oh my God.
And I wasn't even drinking.
I'm never
going to
go see her.
Totally. Yeah. And that's what I thought. I was like, I literally eat like 5 packs of sour Skittles a day, which I'm serious. I really did do that for like years of my life. But
wow,
she said that to me once. And I feel like sometimes she can't tell when she's about to make me cry. But that definitely made me cry. And then like, one time we were talking about something and she was like, "Are your palms sweating?" I was like, "Yeah." She was like, "Good." Like we were talking about something kind of traumatic and she was like, "You're working through it. Your palms are sweating."
Wow.
So very like witchy.
Wow.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. She also like, I love that.
She also told me I can't be a witch because I was a witch in a past life. So.
I love this woman. This woman.
That's my favorite thing she's ever said to me. For sure. Like, no more witchcraft. Like, you were a witch already. I didn't say anything about witchcraft.
I don't know when you got taller. See our reflection in the water.
In that moment when you're at this healer's office and she places her hands over your liver, where exactly even is your liver? Somewhere down there.
Yeah.
In the moment that she tells you that she feels your resentment getting smaller, What's your first thought? What's your first reaction laying on that table?
Well, she told me to write a letter to my dad and was like, that was the first time. I was like, I don't want to do that. And, you know, she made me start drinking less coffee. But this is all pretty extreme. I was drinking like 10 cups of coffee a day.
Phoebe.
I know, rough. I was very anxious. And also she said that to me without any context of my life. Like she does definitely have some weird stuff where I'm like, are you reading my email? Like, what's happening? But, so we had talked a little bit about resentment and stuff. And then she said that to me out of nowhere, you know, in the middle of telling me to eat more salad or leafy greens or whatever. She was like, also your resentment's getting smaller. I can feel it. And I just, to be recognized in that way, it's like when your therapist tells you you're doing a good job. Or you're doing the best you can, and you're like, what?
Well, it's also like cue waterworks. Oh my God.
Yeah, totally.
And when I grow up, I'm gonna look up from my phone and see my life. And it's gonna be just like my recurring dream. I'm at the movies. I don't remember what
predict
I'm seeing.
What's gonna be the soundtrack for 2021, at least thematically. We're going to be in a different mindset, I hope, once that vaccine hits.
I think we deserve a summer anthem that everybody loves. You know, like the song that comes on in the bar that everybody is obsessed with for one summer. My friend Morgan Martinez tweeted something about how there should be like, there should be like a COVID night at nightclubs where you play all the music that nobody got to dance to in 2020.
Dude, yes.
Which I think is genius.
Yes. Yes.
I think that I've already written songs that are pretty obviously about being in quarantine or isolation and stuff. And I hope that we are choosy with that genre of like writing about now because it's so hard, because it's so universal. But yeah, maybe there'll be like some beautiful album that just encapsulates this whole year. Like there are going to be a lot more weird recordings. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll get next year's like Bon Iver for Emma record out of that.
Okay.
Which would be sweet.
But also a summer anthem too, because we got to have that.
Yes. Yes.
Let's like bring T-Pain back for a little while.
Exactly. That's what we need.
You know, he could do it.
Totally.
Oh my goodness, I could ask you so many more questions, but I'm going to let you get on with the rest of your day. But I got to tell you, Phoebe, this was just a treat. I really can't thank you enough for your music. Sometimes the timing of the art that we find and consume is just perfect, and I think it was that for me this year with your music. You really gave me permission to feel in a very real way, and I cannot thank you enough for that.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel... it's very weird that I haven't met you because I feel like your voice is just on when I'm alone all day. This has been, very surreal, and thank you.
Thanks again to Phoebe Bridgers and Sam Sanders for this chat. This episode of It's Been a Minute was originally produced by Andrea Gutierrez. It was edited by Jordana Hochman. Listeners, take good care of yourselves. I'm Elise Hugh, and we'll talk soon.
Taylor Swift has dropped a new album. She is the biggest pop star in the world, and everything she does makes news.
I gasped. I was like, oh my God, I've been there, and you can identify with it.
For a breakdown of Taylor Swift and her new album, The Tortured Poets Department, listen to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. Across the NPR network, we report rigorously on the forces seeking to disrupt democracy and provide communities with reliable information. It's Public Media Giving Days, the perfect time to stand with the facts by donating now at donate.npr.org. Thank you.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beats. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.